Misha, can you unmute? Could you please unmute?
Yeah, there's no sound. And also, can you tilt the camera up so we can see faces instead of feet? if you tilt your computer,
tilt it
up.
I'm working on it.
Thank you. That's perfect now.
Sorry, I had muted it while Sylvia was putting on the headset because it was making all kinds of noise. So thank you. So a couple of us recently heard another Ed Brown talk, and it made me laugh at the beginning. He started out by saying, "So, how is everyone?" And then he says, "Well, I'm kind of scared." He said, "Yeah, I've been doing Dharma talks for a really long time. I don't know why I feel that way tonight." And I thought, huh, how lovely that he can be so honest about how he's feeling in that moment. So I'm hot. I'm not nervous and I'm not anxious. I'm just hot, hot Buddha. So if you recall, I was talking about Jizo Kashidigarbha, who is the Bodhisattva of children and travelers to the next realm. And I didn't finish it. So tonight, I'm just going to really quickly summarize what I'd already said, which was that the reason that I even was thinking about this was that Chris Horton did this wonderful Jizo Bodhisattva ceremony at Tassajara when we were there recently, and it reminded me of other Jizo Bodhisattva ceremonies that I have done. And the very first one that I did at a women's conference, wow, I don't know, it had to be like 1985, 84, and Yvonne Ran and Maylee Scott were the two people who did the ceremony. And it was kind of amazing because there were all these women who had either had abortions or miscarriages or lost children. And there was a great deal of crying. And it was very cathartic. And I remember when we came back, because this was a women's conference, you have to remember, and we were invited by Les to just talk a little bit about it on one Saturday. So I remember we were lined up on the long time, and I could see that especially it made the men in the room really uncomfortable, which I found very interesting because yes, women are the ones having the abortions and having the babies, but men are equally involved in these things. And it's a fact of, especially right now, what's going on. You know, Roe versus Wade came at a very opportune time for many of us. And it breaks my heart that we seem to be going back in the other direction. But maybe that's why we need a Jizo ceremony. So I went back. There's a Jan Chosenbays, who is the head teacher at Great Vow Monastery, started taking up the practice of working with Jizos. And so there are some photographs in here, but this is her book about it. And she goes into great detail. I mean, I'm just giving you the Reader's Digest version here. If you're interested, I'm happy to loan this book. But one thing that I found that I wanted to share, there's a chapter, The Stone Woman Dances. Anyway, in this section, it's called Buddhism as a Refuge for Women. A prevailing belief at the time of the Buddha was that a woman's spiritual role was to bear sons, preferably 10 in number. She could not become enlightened until she was reborn as a man. Her access to the divine was through men, her father, her husband, her sons. The Buddha gave spiritual protection to women by allowing no distinction based upon sex or caste. He accepted women as full members of the Sangha, whether they remained in lay life or underwent ordination, whether they had been queens, prostitutes, or victims of rape. The poems of the early Buddhist nuns in India tell of the hardships endured by women and the freedom, consolation, and safe refuge they found as followers of the Enlightened One. Some of these were women who had gone mad with grief over losing a child, or after being put out of their homes for failure to bear a son. One was Vasati, who went crazy and roamed homeless, mourning for her dead son, until she met the Buddha. Then she entered the enlightened state, an entirely different kind of homelessness, and this is her poem. Grief-stricken for my son, mad-minded out of my senses. I was naked with wild hair and I wandered anywhere. I lived in trash heaps, in a graveyard, and by the highways. 3 years wandering, starved and thirsty. Then in the city of Mithila, I saw the one who tames what is untamed and goes his way in happiness, enlightened, unafraid. I came to my senses, paid homage, and sat down. Out of compassion, Gautama taught me the way. When I heard his words, I set out into homelessness. By putting his teachings into practice, I realized great joy. My grief is cut out, finished, ended, for I have understood the ground from which all grief comes. So I'm going to pass the book around because, except for this one, which is where the poem is, there are images of Jizo. And you can look at them and then pass them on while I'm talking. So as I mentioned last time, Jizo is Kishida Garba, sometimes referred to as Earth Store Buddha, or Bodhisattva. And he was one of the great bodhisattvas of the Mahayana tradition. He made two major vows, or she. Ishi, actually. This was the beginning of transgender, I think. Ishi said, only after the hells are empty will I become a Buddha. Only after all beings are taken across to enlightenment will I myself realize Bodhi. And so, as I said last time, implied in these vows is the assertion that although Earth's Door has the wisdom and virtue necessary to become a Buddha, he chooses instead to postpone his or her own liberation until all beings have been safely reduced from evil destinies, which is, of course, part of the Bodhisattva vows. So Jizo, when you look at the pictures, you'll see some of them, has these certain accoutrements. And one is a very tall staff that has a ring. And it has six rings in the circle, and they make this wonderful sound. So for instance, when you're in Japan and you're doing begging practice, tatsu, the head monk is at the front of the line with that staff, and it is allowing everyone to know that you are coming without saying, oh, hello out there, here we are, that you are chanting, oh, as you go along. And the head monk, with every step, is hitting those rings. And the number of rings ranges from 4 to 6. Sometimes they say that the 4 is for the 4 noble truths, the 6 is for the 6 perfections. But then I've also heard that there are some that have 10, and maybe that's the 10 precepts. But and so they give the staff, those rings give the staff its name, which is Ushojo, which means stick with a voice. And it serves as the voice of the mendicant to both announce their arrival, but also to warn animals and insects that they might want to move out of the way. So the teaching of the six realms of existence has to do with the six rings as well. And if you'll remember those six realms, so if you've seen a tanka, right, there's the six rings, and there's the hell realms and the animal realms, the realm of the hungry ghost. Those are the ones that we invite in. We used to call it Sagaki, but now we call it Sajiki, that we invite in. They're the ones that are depicted with very thin necks and very big bellies because they can never get enough to eat. And of course, the metaphor is that we never can get enough. Right? So, and then there's the human realm, which is us, and the gods. And then the realm of the angry titans, who are called asuras. But that was actually added, it turns out, between the human and the god realms, many years after, I mean, hundreds of years after the Buddha died for some reason. But each realm, of course, even the pleasant existence of the gods, can be a trap. All right, so if we're in the animal realm, the difficulty about being an animal is that you can't think about your thinking, right? What we're doing in Zazen a lot of times is we are letting go of thoughts. But of course, what's the mind that's thinking to let go of the thoughts, right? So there's an ability to self-reflect that humans have that animals do not. The God realm, the problem with the God realm is you get very complacent. No, I've got everything. I don't need anything. I don't need to grow. I don't need to, you know, suffer at all. Because what is the only consolation of suffering? That you learn something, that you grow somehow. So what's interesting is that Buddhists don't really believe in a higher authority that sentences humans to realms of, you know, ceaseless suffering, you know, hell, for instance. And they also don't represent a ladder to climb to heaven. It's understood, you know, when it's on the tanka, it's in a circle. Because you spend some time in each one of those realms all day long. You know, years ago, one of our Sangha members, Carol, died. She had been an Episcopalian. And her Episcopalian priest, Franny, and I were asked to first meet with the family and do a little ceremony. And one of her Episcopalian, or Carol, one of Carol's relatives, an older man, came up to me afterwards. He was clearly curious. He said, "So, do Buddhists believe in heaven and hell?" And I said, "Oh, absolutely. It's just they believe that it's right here." And he looked at me and said, "That's right." So we spend time when we're upset, when we're anxious, when we're uncertain, when we're confused, when we're jealous, when we're angry. Well, that's hell. We're in hell. But when we spend time being happy for others, or being joyous, or saying, or doing something that has meaning or beauty, well, there's heaven. So our understanding is that it's circular, and that we spend time in all these places. So Earth's Door Sutra talks about the hells, the hell realms, in really nightmarish terms, apparently. This is Jan Chosenbase calls eyes wide open Buddhism, because he doesn't, or she doesn't, make it all nice and pretty. So he says, you know, a religion that takes faith off the meditation cushion into the night of the soul, wide-eyed and open-handed, into humanity's griefs, mistakes, broken hearts, and hurting wounds. So I know a lot of people say, "Oh, you Zen people, you just talk about death and dying all the time. Why is that?" You know, so negative. It's a misunderstanding, as you all know, that the more we face these things head on, instead of turning away from them. I don't know about you, but the more I really appreciate my life, actually, oh, yeah, that's going to happen to me, but it's not happening to me right now. And how glad I am when I wake up in the morning. It's like, oh, thank you, another day. This is great. And it may be a really terrible day, but I'm here for it. So, as I said, you know, this journey to the dark side, why we talk about death and dying and being in the moment, no matter how really painful it is it has a compassionate purpose. Right? It's to light our way out. So Earth's door, Bodhisattva, Jizo, extends a hand to pull us out of the cycle of our negative karma that's driven by delusion, and pretty much we're always in a state of delusion of some kind, that unfortunately leads to even more harmful deeds. Earth's door sutra empowers us to fundamentally change our actions and our words and our thoughts. And when that happens, we take charge of our lives. So I was just talking to someone this afternoon. I had read a story by the man who has been writing all these Dalai Lama cat books. And he's writing a new one, and I get to read a chapter every now and then ahead of schedule. And this one, it's the part about Tibetan that I really love. One of the main characters in the story has a bookstore cafe down the hill from the Dalai Lama's residence. And his guru, his Lama, also lives up there and rarely comes to this cafe. You know, that wouldn't be something that would be normal. But the story starts with you see that the owner of this cafe is really upset. Just not himself, very, other friends come and he refuses to be comforted, and he's just really having a hard time. So somebody must have said something to his mama, because all of a sudden there he is in the cafe, and Frank is very surprised. He says, oh, Geshe, are you here to see someone? You, he says. And he starts talking, and it turns out that the cafe many years ago had received a very high rating from this magazine that many tourists get to see as a place where you would want to go visit. But then after a couple of years, they didn't get any mention at all. And suddenly there's this other cafe that's a little bit further down the road that's kind of mediocre, but it now has won the award for best and most interesting cafe 3 times in a row. And he is, you know, this is the third time he's looking at the magazine and he's just so upset. And he's not being able to be comforted or anything in it. And suddenly his teacher said, well, it's just his job. He's like, his what? The reason that this man, whether he deserves it or not, is getting so much, so many accolades, is obviously because of something that happened in his former life when he was Joe. And now it's coming to fruition in this life. And Frank is like, huh, haven't thought about it that way at all. And so then he says to his Geshe, maybe I should send him a bottle of champagne and say congratulations. She says, well, that'd be a good start in the right direction, because then your Joe, is passing on the good karma to the next. I like this idea. I don't know how true it is, but it gives meaning to the fact that so many people really terrible lives, and that my life is really so wonderful. I don't know. maybe my Joe did something good in the last life. And so it behooves me to try and do something good now for the next one. But mostly what we understand in Zen practice is we just try to do the right thing at all times. And we also know that we're not going to. And then we accept that as well. So it turns out that Earth Store, Kashita Garba, is the Bodhisattva with the greatest filial regard. And when born as a woman, she valued her very first relationship, the root connection with her parents, and thought to repay that debt of kindness for her human birth. You know, a lot of times I think, you know, people complain a lot about their parents, but you know what? You got here. I remember one time thanking my father and saying, you know, I don't know. Maybe I was out there somewhere and I saw the two, you and mom, and I said, those are the ones. My father's like, no. But, you know, I suppose it's possible. But, of course, right now, it seems like this idea of thanking parents, no matter what kind of parents they were, for your birth, is a little out of sync with current trends. And, you know, the idea of staying home with your folks, taking care of them, asking after them, working for their comfort, instead of being something that everyone wants to do, it's now seen as a little bit of a burden, something, oh, I have to take care of my parents. But the person who wrote the foreword for this book, Reverend Heng Sir, she asked her teacher, at one point, Master Xuanhua, if somebody wanted to repay parents' kindness while they are still in the world, what would be the best way to do it? And he replied, explain the Earth Store Sutra to your mother. That would pretty much repay her kindness in raising you. Explain that this Bodhisattva is going to give up the opportunity of Buddhahood until everyone can enter. Everyone can be enlightened. A real sacrifice. And yet, it makes perfect sense. Because we are all in this together. We are all one. And so, you know, the baby Buddha stands up and says, I and all beings are enlightened in this moment. With the understanding of our connection. So, as I said, Jizo is actually a figure in history, a bodhisattva in Mahayana Buddhism, who started in India as Kashita Garba, but emigrated into countries of Northern Asia and became a deity that is very popular and, you know, pretty widely venerated even today. So, I don't know about China, but I know that if you go to Japan and you go to any temple, the pictures that you're seeing in that book, usually, before, as you're starting up the road to the temple, there's a little city covered, or there might be one or three or six Jizos statues all in a row, and especially in the small villages, they are all decorated with red rakuses, little red bibs, and that means that a child has died, and those red bibs are representing that child, and it gives the parents a place to go and express their sorrow, express their love, remind themselves, and ask for the prayers and the vows and the practice, the merit of the practice of the monks in that particular temple. So Jizo is also the protector and savior who intervenes and helps those who are caught in places of suffering. This is the Jizo of the mundane world. And any small request can be brought and acknowledged that we can alleviate our daily distress. We can take it directly to Jizo. And Jizo is also known as rescuer. And this is shown in one of the Jizo legends. There are miracle tales about Jizo just as there are about Jesus. In 1776, I love, don't you love that date? Crowds of people went to hear a marvelous Jizo near Yedo, who could be heard reciting the sutras continuously in a low voice. When the covering to protect the image against the rain was removed, however, a nest of bees was found to be making the humming sound. But that's still a miracle. I mean, we can look at these things and we can give them some rational explanation, but the fact is, bees have voices too. They were speaking for Jesus. Same thing when you go to Tassajara. I don't know, you probably noticed this. The rivers, there's two creeks that come together. They make an incredible racket. And on one of the days we were there, I was working in the dining room doing some sewing when suddenly somebody said, "Oh my goodness, it's raining." Well, we were working right next to one of the creeks. It was so noisy. I had not heard the rain. But what you hear is a like a group of people talking, but you can't hear them. It's wonderful. I mean, I remember at Tassajara during practice periods, you would, in the morning, that's what you heard, the creek, but it sounded like maybe it was. So then there's Jizo as a practice. And when spiritual practice is the foundation of our lives, we sometimes seem to be working against the determined drive of our own ego to accumulate material possessions and power and, you know, position, extra pay, whatever it is for us. But Jizo, I love this, unflagging optimism, illuminates our self-doubt. He has made an endless vow. She can shore up our flagging determination. There's plenty of times when we're working really hard and things are not going well. And we begin to doubt, what am I doing here? Why do I keep coming on Monday night? Why do I keep coming on Saturdays? Why do I even sit down on my cushion? Nothing's happening. I'm not getting any better. This is just Western American talk. This is our desire to be something other than what we are. And Jesus says, no, you are already perfect as you are. Which, as Suzuki Roshi has often reminded us, does not mean you cannot improve in some areas. So there was a wonderful monk named Ryokan, who was also a great poet. He loved children, so I wanted to include this poem at the end. I have an old staff that has well served many. Its bark has worn away. All that remains is its strong core. I used it to test the waters, and often it got me out of trouble. Now, though, it leans against the wall, out of service for years. So, you are feeling doubtful. Your energy or determination is flagging. Remember Jesus' staff. Get some strength from that. We have our backbone, and we can have doubt while we also have great faith. And it's clear that for many people, calling on Jesus is very helpful. So that might be something that's helpful to you. But in particular, when you are traveling, either literally or to another realm, remember that Jizo is going to guide the way. Ah.